It's come to order. Commissioner Malone is ill, and I don't know if he'll be able to make it, so we left off with him yesterday. And did any of the committee members have any questions in regards to what he had stated, whether it's the ELF, the unitary tax, personal income tax, or anything that he had stated yesterday? Is there any members here? Yes, Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we on teleconference?
Yes, we are. We do still have Barbara Herman on the line with Department of Law, who will be with us during House Bill number 58, which we'll take up next. Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question on the document that was handed out regarding the personal income tax. I was wondering if there's anyone from the administration that could justify as to how firm the form of that tax is as far as administration policy, or if that's just a working draft.
Greg, would you state your name for the record?
My name is Greg Erickson. I'm senior economist with the Office of Management and Budget. Responding to Representative Rieger's question, the document that was passed out yesterday is a working document. The final approvals have not been, and reviews have not been completed, and everything in that is still subject to change.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further questions of anything that was discussed yesterday? Thank you.
Thank you. Greg.
Okay. At this time, we'll take up House Bill number 58, an act related to confidential tax information. This bill is by the judiciary, sponsored by the Budget and Audit Committee. This particular bill would allow the legislators to receive important confidential tax information from the Department of Revenue. There are two mechanisms for receipt of the information, one by passage of a simple resolution requesting it, and second, upon the initiative of the Commissioner of Revenue. Any consideration of the information would be an executive session so that the taxpayers' rights are protected. If a legislator or staff person violates the confidentiality of the information, there are penalties. A similar version of this bill passed the House last year. The bill would cost nothing to implement. Even though the subject has been discussed in the legislature the last 2 years, there are still some outstanding issues to be resolved. What we're going to do today is hear testimony on this bill, and it'll be placed into a subcommittee consisting of Representative Pershaw, Chair, myself, and Representative Frank. And I think that the first subcommittee will be held tomorrow at 4 p.m. in the House Judiciary Room, right? And so, is there anybody from the administration that would like to testify on this bill before I call the people who have signed up to testify on the bill? Yes, Deborah? Barbara, if there's any time you want to testify on the bill also, please let me know. I've got Deborah Vogt with Department of Law, who's first here to testify. Deborah?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Deborah Vogt, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. I'm not exactly sure what the committee would like to hear from me today. As you know, this bill is a descendant, more or less, of a bill that originated in this committee last session. I thought what I might do with your approval is generally go through and describe what the bill does, talk about the general legal considerations that various committees have looked at, and then talk about some specific issues that have been focused on, and I'd certainly invite Barbara Herman, with the chair's permission, to pipe in anytime she chooses. If that's what you would like me to do, I'll do it.
Yes, please do.
The bill begins with legislative findings that important tax information is necessary to the legislature in the performance of two functions. It's legislative oversight of the Department of Revenue and its tax writing functions, its ability to understand and implement its tax laws with better particularity. The first substantive sections amend the legislative standards of conduct and make it a violation of those standards of conduct for legislators to disclose information that would be received from the Department of Revenue under this bill. The amendments to the Department of Revenue statutes begin with Section 6 on page 4. I take it that we're all working from the House Judiciary committee, committee substitute. Section 6 on page 4 provides that the legislature may request information under certain procedures from the Department of Revenue. that's subsection H. Subsection I permits the Commissioner of Revenue, basically on his own initiative, to provide information that the legislature may or may not have requested. Section J permits a taxpayer whose information is being transferred to be present at the executive session discussing the information. Section K makes the disclosure of the information by a member of the legislature or by the staff a crime in the same way it is currently a crime for members of the administrative branch of government to disclose that information. Section L on page 6 provides that the legislature and the Department of Revenue will establish procedures for handling the confidential information with the standards for safeguards and safekeeping of that information. And Section M provides that this section does not permit the transfer of information that was provided to the Department of Revenue from the Internal Revenue Service. So that's briefly what the bill does. The basic legal considerations that have been at issue are the question of legislative immunity, question of separation of powers, and the exchange agreements with the United States, and the criminal sanctions. The legislative immunity question has been discussed at some length in the House Judiciary Committee both this year and last. I'll just briefly outline what the approach of the bill is, and that is that we all know legislators are entitled to complete immunity for their legislative speech. The Speech and Debate Clause prohibits or immunizes a legislator for that for those kinds of communications. This bill would make it a crime for a legislator to disclose, even on the House floor, even on the Senate floor, confidential tax information. So the question obviously arises, does it work? Can a legislator be subjected to criminal penalties for this type of disclosure? The theory, well, let me back up and say that a number of jurisdictions do provide confidential tax information to their legislative bodies. The Internal Revenue Service will provide the information to Congress. Several states, including California, Alabama, and some others, similarly provide information to their legislators. Those jurisdictions that I have talked to that have thought about the question do so under the theory that the legislature may, in very narrow, specifically drawn circumstances, waive speech and debate immunity. And the theory is that the legislature has plenary power over its own members, and that it may, in a very specific circumstances, invite the assistance of the administrative branch of government and of the courts in enforcing the legislature's own rules against its own members. So that's basically what this bill intends to do, is to ask the rest of government to help you enforce your own rules against against yourselves. This is a theory that the United States Supreme Court has recognized exists. It has never said whether it will fly or not. So the case that most recently mentions it is the United States versus Helstowski. And the court there describes the theory and does not reach whether that theory affects that case. So we don't know what the United States Supreme Court thinks of the theory. I guess the bottom line is that if the criminal sanctions are in the law, that fact combined with the general responsibility of legislators will be an adequate safeguard to the disclosure of confidential information. I think the other policy consideration that's worth considering is that the Speech and Debate Clause is intended not only to protect individual legislators, but the public as well. That we have a public interest in allowing our legislators to openly and freely debate things without interference from the administrative and judicial branches of government. This bill would permit the legislature access to information that it cannot currently consider. And so I think the public interest is served by permitting legislators to review the information, and you don't have the sort of competing reason for the Speech and Debate Clause that we don't want to harness our legislators in any way and keep them from discussing certain ideas or thoughts. So, I mean, this bill would permit you to discuss things you can't now permit. So I think the public policy consideration comes down on the other side from the way it would normally in any limitation of speech and debate clause immunity. People have raised the question that the bill may interfere with the traditional separation of powers between the legislative branch and the executive branch, in that I know some of the oil company representatives have testified that they fear that the legislature would take over settling tax disputes and so on. In my view, the bill does nothing more than to remove a bar of confidentiality that currently exists with this one small category of information. It doesn't authorize the legislature to cross the line of legislative separation of powers any more than it does vis-a-vis any other departments. Not to say that my branch of government won't have disputes with your branch of government. We certainly do from time to time. But I don't believe this bill creates a change in that balance. It simply removes a bar to your access to information that currently exists. Certainly, my office would take the position that, and has taken the position, that the legislature may tell us what the tax laws are and authorize the department to settle disputes, but it certainly may not tell us, vis-a-vis a particular taxpayer, how we should settle that particular dispute, any more than the legislature could tell us how much to pay if the Department of Transportation were condemning a certain piece of property, and that came to the legislature's attention. We certainly would put our hackles up if the legislature were to try to tell us in that individual circumstance how to handle that condemnation proceeding. The next area of legal consideration is the exchange agreements with the United States. The Department of Revenue currently, like all states, or at least I think almost all states, has exchange agreements whereby the United States will provide us with certain taxpayer confidential information. An example might be a federal audit of a federal windfall profit tax return that it would then forward to the state. This information is must be held very strictly confidential by the state. We cannot disclose it to the governor. The restrictions on that information are very tight. That's the reason that this bill contains a provision saying that category of information would not be covered by this bill. That category of information would stay with the Department of Revenue and would not be available to the legislature. The second category of federal information is information that we receive directly from the taxpayer, the copy of the federal tax return that's attached to the state tax return. And the United States doesn't have direct control over the use or the disposition of that information, but it does one of its traditional or typical sort of circular hammers by which it says that it will refuse to give us the first category of information if we don't properly protect the second category of information. I had last year inquired, made sure with representatives from the Internal Revenue Service that disclosure to the legislature would not interfere with that category of confidentiality, and they assured me that it would not, that by permitting the legislature that category of information, they will not stop giving us the first category. The final legal considerations are the criminal sanctions that appear in the bill, and I think your committee substitute shows an amendment to the sanctions that are currently in the law. At the bottom of page 3 and the beginning of page 4, the current law provides that a willful violation of the provisions of the section is punishable by a fine of not more than $5,000 or by imprisonment of not more than 2 years. This is language that puts this crime in an odd category in terms of our criminal code these days. The criminal code, the highest class of misdemeanor, a Class A misdemeanor, is 1 year imprisonment and $5,000. The lowest class of felony is 5 years imprisonment and $50,000, so there's quite a gap between those two. This bill now has been amended to provide that a violation would be a Class A misdemeanor. I don't want to speak for the Judiciary Committee exactly what all the reasons were for making that change, but I know at least some of them had to do with making it consistent with the current criminal code. Similarly, the word willful is not a word that our criminal code recognizes. There are four standards of intent in the criminal code: intentional, knowing, reckless, and negligent. And so the word willful was changed to intentional, just to, at least in part, to be consistent with that code. This is one of the areas that I am going to is on my list of specific considerations that you may want to think about. I'm sorry that Commissioner Malone doesn't... Oh, he is here. Good. All right, then I will not venture into whether the department has opinions about this bill. The specific particular considerations that have been discussed in several of the committees and so on that you may want to consider are, first of all, the words return and return information that appear in Section H and primarily in Section H and elsewhere in the bill. There has been some concern that those words, I think they're on page line 9 of page 4, taxpayer returns or return information, might be construed to narrowly to mean just the return and perhaps the supporting schedules and so on. It was my intent when I first assisted the committee in drafting this bill last year that those words simply parallel the statute itself, which makes it a crime to disclose returns or the particulars or amount of income set out in a report or return made to the title. So I use the same language, that which is made confidential is, in Section H, made transmissible to the legislature. If there is confusion about this, and it may be an area that you want to explore, what is the information particularly that should be transferred? If there is confusion about those words, it should be corrected. One option that you might consider would be to use the federal definition of return and return information in the federal confidentiality statutes at 26 U.S.C. 1603B. The Senate Oil and Gas Committee yesterday deleted the words entirely, leaving it simply to read taxpayer information, confidential taxpayer information. I guess I just think that's something that you should think about and carefully determine. A second consideration has been whether the requirement in Section H that either House pass a simple resolution in order to authorize transfer of information is an appropriate procedure. I think several of these considerations have to do with the tension between the legislature wanting access to information necessary for legitimate tax purposes and at the same time wanting to protect against unnecessary intrusion into an individual or a corporation's affairs. And I think that the return and return, the kind of information that you get is one consideration. The procedures that the legislature must go through in order to trigger the transfer of information is another element in that tension, if you will. Another part of it is on the last second to the last paragraph or section of the bill, the procedures governing the transmittal, receipt, and safekeeping of the information, you might want to set those procedures out instead of leaving them to be made by regulation. The United States certainly sets them out in some detail in their statute. Another related specific concern is Section J of the bill, which provides that this is an amendment that was added in the House Judiciary Committee, that if the information identifies a taxpayer, the taxpayer may attend the portion of the committee meeting that considers the returner information. There may be some desire to notify Section H requires that the taxpayer be notified that the information is being transferred. The difficulty with Section J as it's now drafted is that it could potentially prohibit the consideration of the information that you most need, in that often the information may involve more than one taxpayer, and certainly one taxpayer would not want another one present when his confidential information was being discussed, and there might be antitrust reasons that prohibited them from being there. And so you might find yourself in a situation where you can't hold a discussion because it's a requirement that the taxpayer be permitted to be there, but he can't be there without either disclosing his information to his competitor or violating antitrust or both. Another question that arose in the Oil and Gas Committee yesterday was whether the legislature currently has the authority under the Legislative Budget and Audit Statute, or Audit Division Statute, to look at and report on the taxpayer confidential information that we're talking about. And since that meeting yesterday, I have looked into that question and found a 1972 Attorney General's opinion that basically concludes that the revenue confidentiality statutes and the legislative audit statute are in conflict, and that absent clear legislative advice, the legislative auditor should not be permitted to review taxpayer confidential information, primarily because there were no safeguards and so on, and the request was for the information for furtherance of welfare fraud investigations, and the Attorney General opined that that information couldn't be received. The upshot of that opinion was that an interagency agreement was entered into between the Department of Revenue and the Division of Legislative Audit, and that interagency agreement has been signed at least as recently as 1984. It may have come up again, but in any event, it provided that legislative auditors may have access to the records and files of the department when it is conducting an audit of the Department of Revenue and at no other time. Then it provides for fairly elaborate file cabinet disposition and so on. But the probably most important provision is that the agreement prohibits the Division of Audit from disclosing specifically, including member, disclosing the taxpayer confidential information to anyone outside the division, including members of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, so that the auditor is permitted to review the information and make apparently a report to legislators, but is not permitted to transfer any taxpayer confidential material in that report. Those are all of my comments. I'd be happy to address any questions.
Barbara, did you have anything to add?
No, I'm just here to answer questions just based on experience with the specific tax documents, if legislators have any.
Any questions from anybody? Yes, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could either Deborah or Barbara elaborate on what you feel the words returns or return information means precisely? If the bill were to pass in this form, what information would actually be covered?
I think Barbara and I don't quite agree on that. So, as I stated, when I put those words into the statute, it was my intent that it cover everything that is confidential within the department. Barbara, who would be the person most likely to disclose and most likely to be subject to the criminal sanctions, is concerned that that the language could be interpreted much more narrowly, and she might be. Go ahead, Barbara. Why don't you?
Yeah, I just think that there's a fair amount of uncertainty on what it does mean, just from exposure at various committee hearings in the last few days. Some people, I believe, take the view that it is narrowly interpreted to mean a taxpayer return and supporting schedules. On the other end of the spectrum is Deborah's interpretation, which I think makes a lot of sense. If you've got, if it is broadly interpreted for non-disclosure, why not the same broad interpretation for disclosure? A lot of people have had different views on what it means, and I just think that it's important for the legislature to determine what information it is that it wants access to, and it probably wants as broad an access as possible, and that we ought to just clarify that. Instead of leaving it uncertain.
Mr. Chairman, the federal definition of return information includes such things as whether the taxpayer's return was, is being, or will be examined or subject to other investigation, or any other data received by, recorded by, prepared by, furnished to, or collected by the Secretary with respect to a return or with respect to the determination of the existence or possible existence of a liability or the amount thereof. And that's just part of it. It's quite broad, and we might want to just put a reference in to that definition if that's what the committee has in mind.
Thank you.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple of questions on this section I, mainly. It starts out with the word notwithstanding age of this section, and I'm wondering what in age is is excluded because of that. In other words, there, I see things when I read Section H, it says the committee may consider information on the session. Is that still, does that still hold, or does I override that?
I think the reason for the words, Mr. Chairman, the reason for the words notwithstanding were to indicate that Section I is a separate method of transferring information from H, not in addition to. It isn't that the commissioner needs to make a determination about the legislative request under H. It's that the commissioner may, of his own initiative, provide information that hasn't been requested. I'm not sure whether the section includes, and probably it ought to include, a provision about executive session. Certainly the same safeguards would want to be given to the information under both sections.
Another question on going along with that, notwithstanding H that you see there, I'm looking ahead to Section K, where it says that a member of the legislature and an employee or agent of the legislature before receiving information shall sign, you know, a document that says this is done. Is that Section I, which says notwithstanding, obviate that? I mean, to what extent is that information still held confidential, and to what extent do these written confidentiality agreements apply when kind of transfer is made under...
Mr. Chairman, the subsection K specifically refers to subsection I, so I think that it's quite clear there that the same procedures in K would apply to both I and H. I think you've raised a good question about whether it's... I think the intent has always been that the information transferred under I would be held confidential. It would be a violation of the statute to disclose it, and it would be treated with as much sanctity as information disclosed under H. I think it's worth reviewing whether the bill actually does that.
If there were a case where there was someone introduced a tax bill and it were referred to committee and the commissioner felt that this, there was some taxpayer information that was pertinent and wanted to disclose it, he would come to the committee and say, no, your committee member signed this document before I... That's really what's envisioned on that.
Yes, and that the testimony would be in executive session.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I just have a kind of a practical question. I know last year the bill said willful, and this year it says intentionally divulging information. And I know both of those would be open to broad interpretation, but my question is, last year it said $5,000 fines or 2 years in jail. Now, this year it says Class A misdemeanor. What are the penalties for a Class A misdemeanor?
$5,000 and 1 year in jail. And the, as I alluded to earlier, at least part of the reason for the change is so that the penalties here be consistent with the criminal code, and that's part of the, at least part of the reason for changing willful to intentional, because willful is not a term with any meaning in our criminal code. We have four terms with meaning: intentional, knowing, reckless, and negligent. And the committee may well wish to consider whether intentional is the proper standard of those four. It's probably better to use one of those four than a word that doesn't mean anything, which is willful. As to the penalties, there isn't any particular problem with leaving them in a sort of undefined area vis-a-vis the criminal code, but $5,000 and 2 years is not a class anything crime. Class A felon, a misdemeanor is $5,000 and 1 year. A Class C, or the lowest class of felony, is $50,000 and 5 years.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Schweckhammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I understand, the intent of this bill is to provide legislative review and oversight over the Department of Revenue and also the tax laws. I wonder if you could give me an example as to specifically what kind of information would be provided that would help us in our decision-making process.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps Commissioner Malone, if he's going to testify, would like to address that. I can think of a number of examples. Certainly Barbara Herman can think of some too, but there are certainly oil and gas matters that there's a lot of legislative curiosity about. But even something so simple as if you had a law with an exemption that you intended would benefit a certain category of taxpayer, perhaps Bush residents or something, and it turned out that those people were not getting the exemption, that the only people that were getting the exemption were downtown residents, the commissioner could tell you that right now, just in a statement like I have made, but you might want to examine the underlying material. there's been a considerable... Barbara, why don't you talk about the disputed taxes? I think that's probably one of the primary.
Yes, thanks. Yesterday there was a great deal of concern expressed, and rightfully so, about the backlog in collecting the accounts receivable. And, you know, there was a question asked as to, you know, what we can do to improve the situation. And, you know, one response to that is that we have a very complicated tax law, and the legislature may want to pursue that, see what the problems are at the audit level in administering the tax law, and that might impact whether whether you want to consider a change in the laws on a more, you know, easily administered tax. And I think that that requires some appreciation for how the audits are conducted and the kind of factual problems that we have in presenting both the 4321 and the 4355 case. I mean, that's one very large problem where I think that, that you would have an interest in the specifics.
Thank you.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In Section 6J, I want to understand how you construe the may in that section on line 19, where it says the taxpayer may attend. Is it your thinking that that would preclude a meeting from taking place if a taxpayer refused to attend because there were other taxpayers in the room?
Mr.
Is that what I heard you say?
I'm not sure how that would be construed. If I were a taxpayer, I would like to interpret that language as meaning that I had a right to be at a hearing at which my information were discussed. I can't tell you off the top of my head how that language would be interpreted by a court if it went to a court. But I think there's a substantial possibility that it would be construed as a right that the taxpayer could assert.
Could not the legislature, in its motion going into executive session, place the motion in such a way as to exclude any other taxpayer? I mean, even if you had multiple taxpayers that the same question was touching upon or the same case was touching upon, could not you make the motion in such a way as to exclude other taxpayers at any given moment in that executive session?
Mr. Chairman? I think that you could. I think that in my experience with taxpayer confidential information in other contexts and litigation, it's real awkward to have some people leaving the room and other people coming in the room. there may be times when the committee wants to openly discuss comparisons, may want to say this law affects Ohio differently from the way it affects Exxon. And the fact of the matter is here that we have three major taxpayers, and they are not alike. And there may be information that you would want to review jointly. And I mean, I can envision, for example, reports from the department that would set out how certain laws would affect oil and gas taxpayers. And there might be a spreadsheet that had, you know, 25 or 30 different taxpayers on it. And I don't know how. It seems to me crippling to ask the legislature to consider that information piecemeal, one iota at a time, and be able to then put it together. I mean, I think that there is a legitimate concern here that a taxpayer who could normally come to an open session and hear what people were saying about his affairs and so on be given some mechanism of at least, you don't always invite in public testimony at all of your public hearings, and so I'm not sure that there's a right to say something, but at least to know what's going on. However, I'm afraid may conflict with the legislature's ability to deal with the information in a helpful way. There might be some alternative to this provision that would accomplish all the purposes that you need, that would give the taxpayer an opportunity to explain the information that you've received. There certainly wouldn't be any problem with letting the taxpayer know that certain information is about to be or has been transmitted, and if the taxpayer wants to explain that information, to do so either in writing or... But I think that you run the risk of crippling yourself if you give the taxpayer a right to be present whenever his confidential information is being discussed.
I would tend to agree, and rather than strike the language in total as the Senate Oil and Gas Committee has done, there obviously is a mid-ground there, and I'm sure we're going to be looking at that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deborah, I wonder if you could explain to me what was the change in thinking between the original version of the bill as proposed by the LB&A committee, which would have provided that certain information actually became public, and although it was more limited than the entire tax return, and how we got from that to what's contained in the judiciary version.
Mr. Chairman, I would hesitate to speak for the legislators who made the change, but it was my sense that the original bill did too much and too little. It made public information that there may be sensitive feelings about, and that it needn't go completely public. And additionally, that the simple amount of an assessment wouldn't necessarily give the legislature much information to perform its tax writing functions. You wouldn't know what the assessment was about, how it what the contested issues were. I guess it just was too much and too little.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deborah and Barbara. At this time, the chair will call up Commissioner Malone. I'd like members, if you need any information on Commissioner Malone, I will be having a confirmation hearing on Monday at 1:30, so if there's any members that need any information on him, please see my office and also the two ABC board members on that. Commissioner, we are discussing House Bill number 58.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I may not be able to speak too loudly today, losing my voice, but I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House Bill 58. For the record, my name is Hugh Malone, Commissioner of Revenue, and I'll try to keep my comments on the. I think that Deborah gave a pretty good exposition of the bill itself. I'll try to keep my comments on that as brief as I can. Mr. Chairman, the department supports this legislation, and particularly the section of the legislation that's the policy that's set out in the findings and purpose, that the legislature must exercise its oversight authority to ensure that tax collection by the Department of Revenue is efficient, fair, prompt, and in the best interest of the state. Mr. Chairman, I think that there's two kind of basic issues or public policy questions behind this legislation. One is the ongoing oversight function of the legislature itself. That is to make sure that among the different agencies in the executive branch and the laws that they administer, that those agencies, including the Department of Revenue, administer those laws efficiently and administer them in the way that they were intended to be carried out by the legislature when they were enacted. I think that's the broad definition of the oversight function. I think this bill also emphasizes another point, which might almost be different from oversight itself, and that is accountability. To make sure that the laws are administered fairly and evenly, and that they're administered honestly. And when I say that, for example, issues involved in tax collection, sometimes there's very large amounts of money at stake, sometimes in dispute. There's arguments about the application of the law to different transactions, how taxes are to be computed under the law and under the regulations, and how facts are to be interpreted. There's room for a lot of judgment. There's also room for more than that. There's room for people making decisions that they shouldn't make. And I think that just fundamentally, in order to keep the executive branch of government doing what it's supposed to be doing and keep the people in it honest, you can pass ethics laws till the cows come home, but the way to keep them honest is to look over their shoulders. And I think that the accountability question is probably at least as important as the general oversight function. The accountability issue goes to the heart of this legislation, I believe. But I think the oversight is also important. Mr. Chairman, this legislation attempts to balance a general right to confidentiality and a constitutional right to privacy that we find in the state constitution with a what appears to be, at least to me, a compelling need to make the information, taxpayer information, available to the legislature for the purposes that I already mentioned. Now, in the case of things that in which there's no compelling public interest, at least in the definitions of the courts, for example, whether or not you smoke marijuana in your own home, the courts have said, well, there's an absolute right to privacy and that sort of thing. But in this case here, I believe we're in an area where it's essential that the information be made available to the policymakers so that the policies can be intelligent and informed and fair. And so I think that, you know, there isn't any absolute right to privacy when it comes to tax information because of that reason. And we, in this legislation, attempted to balance the right to privacy through the use of the confidentiality provisions of this proposed statute. The immunity issue, the legislative immunity issue, has already been discussed. Legislators are immune for what they say in the course of carrying out their responsibilities as legislators, and I suppose the extreme example would be somebody taking a tax return and reading it up on the floor of the House of Representatives and claiming immunity. And, of course, the sanctions for that kind of behavior need to be addressed. I think they need to be addressed by the legislature, and I think they can be addressed by the legislature successfully in such a way as to deter people from such outrageous behavior. Not to say that it would never happen, but the fact that somebody might go off on a tangent someday and act contrary to all good sense doesn't mean that a necessary law should not be enacted. Mr. Chairman, I'll deal with a couple of the other issues that have been raised by people who have some degree of discomfort with this legislation. One is the separation of powers issue, that somehow adopting legislation that would allow the legislature to know what's going on in the tax division of the Department of Revenue is going to mean that the separation of powers is weakened. I disagree. I think it's strengthened because the legislature can hold the executive branch accountable. And you know, I'm quite certain that the legislature does not want to engage in the business of auditing tax returns or even the business of trying to negotiate out settlements, but I think they'd like to know what the heck is going on in a settlement, and I think they should. An argument's been made that this legislation does not limit the scope of the legislative review. Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's exactly the point. The amount of information the legislature requires is something that the legislature is going to have to determine. How much information do you need to make a decision or to understand tax policy or the application of it in particular areas? And so I think that limiting the scope of the legislative review, for example, saying, well, you couldn't be requesting information at an early stage while returns were under audit or before a hearing or before a court decision or something like that, just basically puts the legislature in the position of having to trust what the people in the executive branch are willing to say, puts people in the executive branch in position